Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in the ring.
That's all I got to say, man. Watching Saturday night, Paul Williams being put to sleep. My 9-year-old was in front of me watching Sergio Martinez and Paul Williams in Atlantic City. And as soon as that left hand connected into the jaw of Paul Williams, the Punisher, my 9-year-old turns around and looks at me and says, "This man needs a blanket." Was he put to sleep or what? I couldn't believe it. You know, I think a lot of us hardcore boxing fans and boxing heads out there thought that Paul Williams was going to come into this fight fighting the way he fought the first fight in the later half, cautious, on the outside, using his range, not allowing Sergio Martinez to get in the mix with him, to get in the pocket. But he did something that he shouldn't have done. I even tweeted it out on Twitter that, he needed to calm down before he walked into a punch, and he walks into a punch. And he gets put to sleep. I mean, he just didn't get knocked out. This guy was seeing birds, you know, kind of trip around his head. He was out. His eyes were all glossy, you know. The mouth was open, drooling on the mat. It was nasty. I mean, it was bad. You know, we all hope that Paul Williams, the Punisher, is okay. He did ask for everything from the champ Sergio Martinez out of Argentina. You know, he was announced first. You know, he was in the blue corner. The fight was at 157. Now, everything this way towards Paul the Punisher, you know. And like I said, the strategy, I think a lot of us critics and fans that love this sport of boxing were all figuring Paul was going to fight on the outside. He was going to be cautious. And he was going to try to make it more of a technical showdown. But instead, Paul the Punisher wanted to punish Sergio Martinez, but instead gets punished himself by a perfect left hook that puts Paul the Punisher to La La Land. I got my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and this is My Boxing Fans' official radio show, Leaving in the Ring. This is your host, David Duenas. Gabriel, what's going on, brother? I know you're over there in AC right now.
Yeah, I'm somewhere. I'm heading actually away from AC to an undisclosed location where I will catch a plane and then head back to L.A., so I don't know if you can tell, my voice is a little deep. I was out late last night celebrating after the big win by Maravilla. It was amazing, dude, and I think you really illustrated it well. It was like everything was against Sergio Martinez last night. The one great thing that I'll get to that in a minute, but, I mean, he came out second but was announced first like a challenger, was in the blue corner, the challenger's corner. You know, he had to take less money. He didn't get any gate money, any sponsorship money, and you know, he was basically disrespected completely. And you know, justice was served. The boxing god spoke. He landed a beautiful rear left hook and knocked Paul Williams out. It was weird. The life had been sucked out of the room by kind of a crappy undercard, and then the room just got. I mean, the roof blew off of the arena. It was just amazing. People were screaming, total bedlam. It was just absolutely unbelievable. He did what champions should do. Everything back against the wall, and he reminds everybody who the champion really is. And what I was going to say was the great thing, the one thing that they did with that contract is they didn't put a rematch clause in it. And that's probably the biggest mistake Williams made, but a great thing for boxing, and that I don't really think we need to see a rematch personally. I mean, when you win like that, you know, it's just kind of, I don't know, it just erased all doubt in my mind. It's kind of like, you know, Lewis Rockman 2. Did we need to see a 3? I don't think so.
Well, you know, the thing about this, though, is this, Gabe, is like you said, there is no rematch clause in this fight. Everything was up against Sergio Martinez, you know, and I think the difference And I'm not, you know, fight fans, don't take this offensively what I'm about to say, but the difference when you see a fighter come from a third world country to Americans fighters is sometimes the American fighters are a little bit spoiled. And the Sergio Martinez fought that he had everything to prove in this bout. You know, even though he had the majority of fight fans rooting for him and believing he won that first fight. But he came out like he had only one way to make sure that it was going to sway his way, and that was knock out Paul Williams. You know, now talk about, you know, the clause of a no being no rematch, and Gable, you're saying, you know, and rightfully so, saying that, do we need to see another one? But the reality is this: Sergio Martinez is now the undisputed middleweight champion. He's defended his crown against Paul Williams, you know, his first title defense. But is there anybody out there for him to maybe possibly make up for what he's lost money-wise in the ring, you know? And so if you kind of look it all the way down, do you see a Manny Pacquiao trying to jump up? Do you see a Angulo? Do you see a Kelly Pavlik wanting a rematch or anybody else? I say no. I think the only ticket for him, again, where he would probably get the money that he would be more deserving, but you just want to draw a huge crowd to it, will be to have a rubber match with Paul with the Punisher Williams.
Yeah, that's a great question, where he goes next. You know, the one thing I do, jumping back to the fight really quick, I wanted to mention, and it's been reported, I think, by a few people now, but in the press conference, Martinez's trainer, Gabriel Sarmiento, he, I guess the night before the fight, woke up in the middle of the night and thought of a flaw that Paul Williams had, and he showed us in the press conference. He went to the nightstand at the hotel, wrote 2 pages of notes, and showed it to Maravilla, to Martinez, and basically what the pad was. And Tom Hauser was there as a witness in the locker room to see the pad that it had not been written after the fight, but before. And it was a blueprint on how to knock out Paul Williams in 2 rounds. And as he followed the blueprint to the T, and that's how he got his knockout. So, I mean, Bento needs to be really proud of there. He's one of the best trainers. And as D, who was there, said, one of the best tacticians in the game. I would completely agree with that. But where does Martinez go now? Man, I don't know. He's not going to fight Berto. I mean, they're stable, and Berto's a welterweight. Paul Williams, I mean, maybe Paul Williams again. But, I mean, that was a brutal knockout, man. Maybe he needs a second to think about that. Kelly Pavlik, maybe. I mean, if he shows up, if he's healthy. I talked to Kerry Davis from HBO, and I asked him, what about doing kind of a middleweight tournament? And there was a certain other writer there who disagreed, saying that the last middleweight tournament was to crown a champion, and we already have our champion. But my thinking is this, is that you've got Dmitry Pirog, who everybody wants to see, and Kerry didn't seem to want to say whether or not Pirog would actually be on HBO next year, although I've heard otherwise, but he would know. But you've got Gennady Golovkin, you've got Pirog, you've got Sebastian Sylvester, you've got Felix Sturm, all these guys that are kind of more, you know, some are young, but they're title holders, and others are established and have belts. Why not just bring them here and do a tournament and let them fight? I mean, that's kind of what the upper echelon should be doing. That's what
right.
I would do. If, you know, I really don't know where Sergio, I've been trying to rack my brain since last night. I have no idea where he goes from here. Maybe Mayweather, but if you were Floyd Mayweather and you're sitting at home on vacation watching that with your boys, you're like, well, you know what? I want a piece of that guy. He just knocked out Paul Williams. I don't know.
If anybody had, you know, a radar in possibly facing Sergio Martinez, obviously that radar has really honestly been turned off. I don't think anybody right now, seeing what he did to a guy that has been reported to be 6'2", but Emmanuel Stewart said he is not 6'2". He's probably about 6'3". And seeing what, you know, Martinez was able to land, I think it right away made anybody that had eyes on him decide to turn away and look at another opponent to possibly get mixed with in that square circle. Because right now, I mean, Martinez, you know, I was talking to Carlos from Boricua Boxing on Friday after the weigh-in, and, you know, leaving the ring, George Jimenez was out there as well. And I said, hey, you know, the big concern out here right now is that Sergio Martinez looked drained. His face really looked sucked up, but his body looked, you know, ready to go. But it, you could just see in his face that he looked sucked up. So I think even the Williams camp at the time was kind of looking at that. And, you know, it kind of left me thinking, like, damn, did that 3 pounds mess him up, moving up and now being a full-fledged middleweight? But obviously it didn't. It didn't affect him at all, right?
No, not at all. I mean, well, there was a couple things. One, I think this might have accounted for why he looked so bad. Martinez had a cold going into the fight. He let us know at the press conference, but didn't want anybody to know because, you know, pretty much he was kind of saying, you know, unlike Paul Williams, I don't like excuses. And it was actually took a lot of exception at Paul Williams constantly using the excuse of I only had a few weeks to prepare for that last fight. Martinez said, he addressed the fact that he had, you know, the 176-pound weigh-in and then the 166 before the fight. And he said, look, I was moving to, I made the decision, you know, before I was fighting 154 or 160, I made the decision to acclimate my body to middleweight. And so I wanted to have more weight early on, kind of pack it on, and then slowly take myself down so that when I rehydrated, I would have more weight and I would be stronger and I would actually be at middleweight. There's a science to acclimating to a new weight class. You don't just jump on up and move all around. And you kind of look at Paul Williams, and they both weighed, what, 168 the night of the fight? But one guy just seemed stronger and a better packed in 168. That's 168 on a small 5'11 frame. And I agree with you. I think Paul Williams is like 6'3", dude. He's huge. I mean, although everybody at me seems huge because I'm
I don't know if I think they both look strong. But the truth is that Paul Williams really honestly went in there with a complete different game plan than a lot of us were expecting. I mean, granted, he doesn't use his height. He's never used it. You know, he always fights like a much smaller man. But like I said, when he got in trouble with Sergio Martinez in the first fight, he fought tall. He decided to back off and let Martinez be the aggressor where he countered. He did the exact same thing he went wrong with in the first fight, which was go after Martinez. Allowed Martinez's shorter arms to get to the target a lot quicker than his long, lanky arm. You know what I mean? Where his trainer should have told him, what are you doing? Why are you trying to be the smaller man in this fight? What makes you think that you're going to land there first before Martinez, you know? Everybody, I got a couple of fans calling in right now. Just stay on hold for a second. We'll patch you guys in. We'll open up the phone lines on Leaving the Ring. Just stay with us. But really quick, Gabriel, let me take a bite of my crow here that I got some barbecue sauce on and drink a little bit of my soda here and stuff because I got to wash down the crow, a roast crow that we have since Antonio Margarito lost to Manny Pacquiao last Saturday on a 12-round unanimous decision where Manny Pacquiao was able to land whatever he wanted against a moving heavy bag coming towards him. So, if you were picking for Manny, good for you. I was just thinking, what styles make fights, and Antonio Margarito was going to have, you know, maybe a successful night, but he didn't. Hey, I could take it. I lost that. I lost that prediction there. So no biggie.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, I've been eating crow all week about it, dude. You know, I had to do 2 mailbags this week just to get all the crow in. You know, I had a slice of humble pie on the side. It was, you know, it was what it was. You make a pick. It's kind of funny. It's like last week I went with the underdog, totally wrong. This week, you know, I went with a favorite, and I was totally wrong. You know, you just never know. That's the beautiful thing about boxing is when you do get top-level guys, and you know, a lot of people think I denigrated Margarito after the fight, and I didn't. You know, he's you know, not that far removed from being at the top of the welterweight world, and he loses to Mosley. That's what happens when you fight top guys. Is anything can happen, and you don't just fall off and you're always a bum because you lost. Like, I look at Paul Williams, and I don't think the guy's a bum. I don't think he's bad. I think that the business between him and Martinez is kind of closed because the first fight was close. A lot of people thought Martinez won. Second time, Martinez just left no doubt.
You know,
and we basically got to see two guys go through full training camps preparing for themselves after having fought and knowing each other. Martinez made adjustments. Paul came in with a plan to basically, we're just going to go to war and fight, and somebody's going to get knocked out. Well, great plan. You got knocked out, you know. And Martinez, on the other hand, was constantly adjusting. I mean, obviously, you know, his trainer Sarmiento was training or was tweaking their game plan up to the moment of the fight. And I just think that's the difference. One guy had a smart trainer, and the other guy went, "I have the bigger guy, the younger guy. We're just going to throw him out there, and he's going to fight, and we're going to overwhelm this guy." And
absolutely,
that just wasn't the case.
You know, and going back with the Antonio Margarito and Manny Pacquiao fight, is, you know, one thing about this I got to say, because a lot of you guys were saying that he wasn't going to be able to touch him and that Manny would not get hurt. Well, he did get hurt, and he did get touched. And one thing was that he did have to get, you know, learn how to fight backwards. You know, he didn't do it successfully, you know, but there's one thing that we saw Manny do new in the fight that we've never seen him do before, which was get on his toes and get away from danger. When you've seen him in the past with Josh with Kaladi and with even with Miguel Cotto, he would still lay on those ropes and allow you to tee off and wait for you to finish so that he can come back. He couldn't do that with Antonio Margarito. You saw the huge size difference where Antonio had him against the ropes and Manny had a rollout, which was the best thing that he had to do. That just told me that he was a thinking man in the ring that night. He knew his limitations and he knew I can't stay in the pocket much too longer. Let's get in some fight fans in really quick here, Gable, and see what they got to say. We'll go. We don't got David Chen with us today, so I'm just going to go blind here. Area code 845. You're live right now on Leave It in the Ring, brother. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's up, Dave? It's Jason.
What's up, Jason? How you doing, brother?
Man, you know me, man. The number one pack hater.
Yeah. So tell me, brother, what do you want to talk about, man? What's your rant?
Man, boxing in general, about time, man. I'm getting my fix. You know, with boxing, I've been getting some really good fights and a lot of good fights still coming up. So that's a good thing. That's a plus.
That's a plus for us fight fans, too. You know, and even last night after the Sergio Martinez and Paul Williams, you had the amateur fighters doing their semi-pro. You know, you had Mexico Guerreros versus the Memphis Force, and that was great. I don't know if anybody caught on to watching that. There was actually some good fights on there where you saw these amateur guys go at it for 3 minutes for five rounds. I mean, they were going to war in the card.
Yeah, the hometown fighter Luis Orlandito del Valle fought also on the undercard. I think he won a third round knockout. He's from my training from my hometown.
There you go.
He seems to be looking good. Let's see what's in store for him. But I want to comment on last week's performance on Manny Pacquiao with Margarito.
Go ahead, brother.
A lot of overhype on that, man. You know what I mean? He had a stationary guy who basically is a has-been. You know what I mean? I mean, It was a virtuoso performance, but it's not anything that we should start calling the guy an all-time great. You know what I mean?
I agree with you on that one. And the reason I'm going to tell you what I agree on. And I know some people are going to be like, no. He had, you know, you picked Margarito. But let's think about this here for a second, okay, people. Manny Pacquiao, great fighter, but all-time great. We got to pick and choose our words very carefully in what we say. Let's not get over too excited, because if you're calling him an all-time great, that means you're calling Margarito a great fighter, you're calling Kaladi a great fighter, and even Cotto even a greater fighter. You put any three of those guys in the divisions back in the 80s and even in the mid-90s, you got to really look at, they're just solid contenders just like they're right now. Solid contenders, not all-time greats, you know. So that I have a problem with that myself, too. I think Manny's fantastic. I think he's, you know, explosive, and he is a great fighter. But to start saying that he's the all-time great, I don't know. What do you think, Gabe?
That's, you know, people just go crazy, you know. Why don't we just wait till his career's over, and then we can judge it in history? And the guys today don't fight the amount of times that the old-time fighters go, so it's hard to really put their careers up against each other while it's going on, or really in general. I think we got to wait. I mean, I think here's the thing, you know, is that what Martinez did this weekend was take on a fellow elite that had never been stopped. I believe he was, you know, he was the guy to drop him, I think, for the first time. I could be wrong. And he knocked him the hell out, and the style didn't
play to
his strengths. Yeah. I mean, the style didn't play to his strengths. Everything was against him, and he knocked him the hell out. Now, you go back to the Pacquiao fight, and yeah, I picked Margarito to win, but everybody knew that was a huge long shot. It was like he was a 6-1
right.
dog. And I picked him by knockout, which probably was even a bigger underdog shot, probably like 8-1, 10-1. So, you know, how do you elevate a guy off of that kind of win? I mean, it was impressive. He beat up a bigger guy, a tougher guy.
Right.
Almost got stopped with that body shot, but does that elevate him to all-time great status, or was he that before? I don't know. I think it's just another very good win for Manny Pacquiao. But I want to see him fight an elite guy, just like Sergio Martinez did. You know, let's see what he does.
Amen to that.
You know, yeah. I mean, I'm not denigrating him. I just want to see him in a good fight. I'd like to see him fight Berto. for a couple reasons.
Really?
You know? Yeah.
I don't want to see that fight. I mean, the reason I say that is because what has Berto done to really honestly show us that he can be competitive against Manny Pacquiao? You know what I mean? Fighting a Freddie Hernandez coming up this Saturday, it's not going to prove anything. Now, one thing about Berto, too, is that
Avery Cartel.
Yeah,
exactly right. It would be a death blow to a near death blow to the Al Haymon boxing organization. That would make me very happy. Nothing against Andre Berto, nothing against Paul Williams. We're talking more about the way Al runs HBO and overpays his fighters and all that. Good for the fighters, bad for boxing. And I think Pacquiao cleaning house on that would be nice, you know?
Go ahead, Jason. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I wanted to congratulate Gabe on that interview at the wild card gym with Manny. He had Manny stuttering when he was hitting him with some hard questions. Hey, look, Gabe, I'm going to tell you something, and I told Dave before, I heard you before, man, and I didn't have too much of a liking to you because I'm being biased and I'm being honest. You said truthful things about Mayweather that I didn't like because I'm a Mayweather fan, but the things that you said were true. But then when I saw how unbiased you really are and that you're a real boxing fan and you hit Manny with some questions, you became my new hero.
Wow. Thank you very much. And that's very high praise. I appreciate that. And I try to be, you know, it's funny. I write about Paul Williams. All of a sudden, I'm a Paul Williams lover. If I write about some other guy, I love that guy. And people always kind of go back and forth and shit at you. I can see the whole picture and go, I'm just a boxing guy. And I try to call it as honest as I can. I appreciate that, man. Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, listen, if you see Alex Ariza, tell him that I said that he needs to stop talking shit, dude. Alex, secret sauce Ariza, all right?
Secret sauce Ariza.
That guy's a bum. He knocked out Michael Kahn's, and he thinks he's a big shot. And you know what? He has the audacity to call Mosley a quitter and a bum. He's never stepped foot inside of a ring.
I thought that was pretty lame of him.
That's classless. Just like the whole Freddie Roach camp. Those guys talk tons of shit, and then when somebody calls Freddie milkshakes, Freddie gets all offended and he starts wetting his panties and crying and it's not right to make fun of somebody's disease, but if you're gonna talk shit, then you gotta be able to take it like a man when it gets dished back to you.
That's the point of view.
True.
You know, I mean, I didn't like the talking about this disease, but yeah, you know, I mean, if you're in warfare, sorry, I'm in transit. I'm like grabbing my suitcase. If you're in warfare and you're going to talk to people like that and about people like that, you are going to have to expect incoming fire. I think Alex, I like Alex personally.
Alex is a good guy. I mean, he's a good guy.
But the conditioning coach shouldn't be talking shit.
No,
exactly.
That's basically it. You know, leave this shit talking to Freddie Roach. Leave it to the fighter.
Leave it to the fighters. That's what I say. Leave it to the fighters. Even the trainers should really honestly kind of stay out of what what the fighters are going to do. Because at the end of the day, it's not them that are going to be stepping in the ring. It's the fighter and stuff, you know. But, really quick, I want to go back with the Berto. And who does Manny Pacquiao go after next? You know, there's been talk of Berto. There's been talk of Cotto. There's been talk of Mosley. You know, even Timothy Bradley, winner of Devon Alexander, Timothy Bradley. The problem, though, with any of those fights there, Berto, first off, doesn't got the quickest feet in the world. He stands in front of you. He does have fast hands, but not a whole lot of punch. I think Manny's going to have his way with him. You know, I think a lot of fight fans are going to be able to see that Berto right now has not proven he can stay up with Manny Pacquiao. But then you go to Alexander and Devon and Alexander and Timothy Bradley. Is it going to be at 140? I highly doubt it. I highly doubt that fight will make it at 140.
Yeah.
I think Manny Pacquiao and Freddie Roach have shown us that they have to have the advantages any which way they can, which is rightfully so. They're the pound for pound. They're the stars, the star of the sport at this moment. They're the big draw. So I see the winner of the Alexander and Bradley fight is them coming up to 147. Now, Mosley, of course, still going to make it at 147 if that fight happens. What we saw with Mosley against Floyd Mayweather, we saw a guy that could only go 2-3 rounds, and then he's going to be spent. He's a one-handed fighter, and he just can't pull the trigger. You know, and that's what Freddie Roach is basically seeing, and that's what he's going to say if the fight is to be materialized. Now, Miguel Cotto, man, not really too sure. Even after that sensational win over Yuri Foreman, I'm still very hesitant in believing that Miguel Cotto is back in full form. You know, I still think he needs another fight to see whether or not, and not just any other fight. He needs a tough fight. He needs somebody out there that's going to give him some work to see whether or not his face and his body is going to hold up to what is going to happen if he's back in a rematch with Manny Pacquiao. Now, leaves up to Sergio Martinez's sensational win over Paul Williams. Could that happen? Lou DiBella put it on Twitter, Sergio Martinez too big, Berto too small. Hey, if I remember correctly, Sergio Martinez was at 154. Can he make 154 again? And if they were to have any talks, would the Manny Pacquiao camp say, not 154, 150? Gabriel?
I don't think Lou last night said no catch weight. We're not doing a catch weight anymore for Sergio Martinez. They want to treat him like the middleweight champion. I just think, you know, to me, what I called last night was birth of an A-side. You know, now the guy is legitimately a star. You can't deny it. With the Pacquiao sweepstakes, even Sergio Martinez said he's like, Pacquiao's too small, it would be a mismatch. And I kind of agree with him. He's a big man with power compared to Manny. But then you look at, Berto or the Pacquiao sweepstakes. I'll just jump to that. With Mosley, here's the thing. Styles may make fights with him. He may be able to, Manny's going to kind of come to him. He's going to move all around him and swarm him and use angles and shit. But Manny likes to fight. If you look at, the last two fights that Mosley's looked like crap in, he's fought two guys that don't really like to fight. They like to box and move. Who looks good against Sergio Mora? So, I mean, I don't like that fight. I worry about Mosley's health. But at the same time, it might actually be an action-packed fight. So, hang on one second. Give me one second. I'll be right
back. Yeah. Action-packed for maybe 2-3 rounds. I don't know. I can't see it actually being action-packed after that third round. I mean, we saw exactly what happens if you just walk to him. Antonio Margarito's face can attest to that. I mean, you walk towards Manny, he's gonna just, this is the thing what I did see from that fight with Antonio Margarito and Manny Pacquiao is Manny finally registered, I can't hurt this guy. I'm throwing everything but the kitchen sink, so I'm going to have to revert into just keeping doing angles and making sure my back doesn't touch that rope. Now, Shane Mosley is obviously a very strong, strong fighter, but he's going to have to look for Manny. And so in reality, you're going to see exactly what Margarito did with Shane Mosley. Mosley is trying to walk him down and at least try to catch him. Say though, Mosley can put somebody out. At one time I had a discussion with somebody. I'm gonna patch in another fight fan right now. Jason, stay on hold, okay? Don't hang up. Somebody said to me, he said, yeah, but Mosley's not a very big puncher. But I think Mosley's a lot bigger of a puncher than Antonio Margarito is. We've seen him in late fights. One right now pops into my head, Ricardo Mayorga, where he was really falling behind, and he finished the show by knocking out Mayorga. We've seen him hurt Floyd Mayweather on that second round, and it shows that he can still hurt an opponent, but they got to be in front of him. Manny will make a mistake by being in front of him, but I like the way Manny recoups, and I like the fact that when he does get dazed, he does become a thinking fighter.
Yeah, I'd pick Pacquiao to beat Mosley. I mean, I just think I agree with you. Like after 3-4 rounds, but the thing is that I think Mosley could look better when a dude comes to him, and he's able to throw. The thing with him though is that Manny's really good at moving and hitting at the same time, and he'll be floating through the air and kind of whack you and land. And I don't know if Shane can deal with that. I don't think he'd be able to cut off the ring, which I don't think he's ever really been good at. Yeah,
I think that if anything, you know, and Shane, hopefully we can get you back on in the ring. If anything, you know, it's been reported even by your camp, back problems, from shoulder problems, to a lot of problems. And I think that it's all going to just rise to the surface if it happens to be on fight night against Manny Pacquiao. All those problems are going to rise to the surface. So you have everything. You're not just going to be facing a guy that's fast, that has power, and a guy that's going to be jumping around like a Mexican jumping bean, but you're going to have all these other physical problems along with you in this fight. It's just, to me, it's just Berto Mosley, to me, is just out the door in questioning of giving these guys a match. Even though Mosley's been treated like the janitor for Golden Boys, taking out the trash, and the guy's been walked on so many times that in some ways you have to sympathize with him and say, you know what, shit, give him the fight. Let him get another big payday. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it would be very interesting to see him kind of walk away from Golden Boy and go and make a big fight. And he's kind of right, though. You know, the big fights that he's taken have been with top rank. You know, we were against top rank fighters. I mean, the first De La Hoya fight, Cotto, Margarito. So it kind of falls in line, you know. And it also kind of, in a sense, I don't know if this is good or bad for boxing or just indifferent, but kind of shows the whole partnership thing with Golden Boy. It was kind of PR. You know, they call them like partners, sort of like, you know, baristas at Starbucks are partners in the company. It's this kind of lingo, but you don't really actually own the company. You may have some shares in it. And this partnership has been up for a while. And you saw Hopkins when he was all upset at them before he got the Pascal fight, when they were saying he should retire. Oh, he exposed the same thing. Like, I'm not really a partner. I just kind of have a contract, and I don't really have one anymore. And there's a little bit of that facade that's kind of pulled back. And we can just see that it's just Golden Boy. It's Richard Schaefer. It's Oscar running that company. And like I said, it's kind of just an off to the side thing, but it's kind of interesting to see. The reason I like Berto, he's a young dude, he's unproven. It could end up looking like a David Reed fight, but I think he kind of matches up in terms of speed, strength, with Manny. He's got that right hand. He actually does jab, or can jab. He's got kind of all the punches. I mean, I think his defense is suspect. He's flawed. But that always kind of, to me, makes for a better fight, is when one guy's flawed. And both guys are kind of flawed here. You know, I don't think he really has much of an uppercut, which is Manny's big flaw. But again, you know, what does he deserve? Well, what's Berto going to do to deserve a shot in the welterweight division at a Manny Pacquiao?
I think he's walked himself out of ever deserving a shot. I mean, every move should have made, he didn't make. I mean, he's allowed his management team to dictate his career so bad into the mud that can we wash him clean now? Can we see him get, you know, dressed fully with a new suit and make fight fans go, okay, this is competitive? I think right now, Gabriel, that he shot himself not just on one foot, but on both feet. He's not limping. He's crawling. Going against Freddie Hernandez has left a bad taste in a lot of fight fans' mouths and have made fight fans turn against them. Look at Boxing 360's tweets. You can tell there's a lot of fight fans literally pissed off with Andre Berto at the moment, and rightfully so.
Yeah, no, rightfully so. I mean, when you turn down the first fight, the first attempt with Mosley, okay, you got, you know, Haiti and all that, but you did take the step aside. And then, you know, then the second fight, I mean, they wanted 50-50. They didn't want to do it in L.A., you know, or they didn't want 50-50. They didn't want to do it in L.A. And you know, they just didn't want the fight all of a sudden with Mosley, which, you know, looking at the Mora fight, like, why wouldn't you have taken that, you know? Even looking at the Mayweather fight, like, the time to strike was then. Like, Mosley's stock was not going to be any higher than this, you know, unless he knocked Sergio Mora out and looked spectacular. It wasn't going to raise. You know, and then now the sell-by date on Mosley, people don't even, last year, remember everybody was talking about Mosley Pacquiao. They wanted that fight.
Oh, yeah.
This year, you know, nobody wants that fight. I mean, that's just how it goes, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But it's to that point, like you were saying, you know, sometimes the champion has to give another guy a shot. And Berto's had a terrible reign at welterweight. I mean, you know, I'm one of his biggest critics as well. But at some point, it's like, all right, well, you know, who else is Manny going to face? You know, he could probably make some good money against Berto. It's a tough fight, and it's a fight that I think fans would appreciate and would like. I mean, I'd see it. You know, I kind of looked at him like, you know what? I didn't really want to travel to go see if Margarito was going to beat Pacquiao. It's just kind of like, it's probably not going to happen. I had a really good feeling that it would, but it's probably not going to happen. I would travel for Berto Pacquiao. I definitely would.
Just
because he's young and fresh.
Right.
And
I hear what you're saying. But
yeah.
I'm still leaning that. I don't think it's – I don't know. I just don't see anything that Berto's going to bring to the table to keep Manny off of him. You know, and Manny's one of those type of fighters. If he feels like you cannot hurt him, he's going to mow through you. And Berto has shown he doesn't have the heavy hands that other welterweights like Cotto, Kaladi, and Margarito have been able to possess to keep Manny a little bit humble. But and look at how humble he was, that he was landing – hellacious and large amounts of punches on all three of those guys I just mentioned. You just imagine how much humbler he would be against Berto. Well, let's patch in some fight fans. Fight fans, you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Go right ahead. The lines are open on Leaving the Ring with your host, David Duenas and Gabriel Montoya. Let's go with area code 623. You're on live right now, brother. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's going on? This is Tony Whitby, man. I always hit you guys up on Facebook.
What's up, Tony? How you doing, brother?
I got to kind of agree with the Berto factor on the idea that he's unknown. I mean, he's definitely not tested. He doesn't deserve it, but we kind of already know what's going to happen if Mosley gets in the ring with him. And the only way Cotto, to me, would be exciting if it was at 154, at a real 154, that would be pretty exciting to me. But aside from that, I think it's going to go Berto next, and then the winner of Bradley Alexander possibly after that. And after that, it's probably going to end up being retirement. I mean, there's nobody
right.
else around that's going to give him anything else. And it kind of is fitting the same thing for Martinez, too. He's almost in the same position in a way. So,
right.
I don't know. They're both two of my favorite fighters. So
you know,
I don't know. The
shitty part is that Martinez is in a much worse situation because there are really no names out there, unless you think of Lucian Bute, but Bute signed with Showtime, and that
yep.
means that Showtime would have to want to, you know, co-promote with HBO, and the last time
not
we saw that happen...
Not necessarily. I would say this right now. I would not be surprised if Sergio Martinez fights on Showtime in his next fight.
Well, he doesn't have an exclusive contract with HBO, right?
Right. They buy fights, not fighters, is what Terry Davis told me, although I would disagree.
Well, aside from that, they're even talking maybe even Dmitry Pirog, but I mean, you know, he's unproven as well, even though he has a belt. But I think Bute would be too much at 168. I just think anybody at 160, he pretty much owns that division right now, and he's even
so
said
too.
That he only wants to go three or four more fights, and he's going to call it a day, you know? So I don't know. I mean, that knockout last night was fantastic, though. I mean, I think we can all agree on that. That was phenomenal.
Oh, man. I mean, it put chills down my spine. I mean, I was just like, what the? I mean, honestly, who really thought? I mean, who saw that coming? I didn't see it coming. Did you see it coming?
No, not at all. I had it going to a weird majority decision. I thought it was going to go towards Martinez, and then we'll see a trilogy happen. But after you see Paul Williams' eyes just stop moving, going to the canvas, I don't know if we're going to see a trilogy after all. I mean, who knows? I'm interested to know, do you guys know how much Paul Williams got paid for the fight? Because I heard it's undisclosed. I'm wondering if anybody can find out what that really is or if it's really top secret, you know?
I don't know. Well, however much money he got for that one, you know he's able to buy a nice silky blanket and a nice silky pillow and stuff, man, the way he was put to sleep last night. You know.
Hey, I'm going to get out of here. I just want to say thank you guys, man. I love you guys' show, and I'm going to go ahead and get off, but thank you guys for taking my call. Appreciate it.
Hey, brother, thank you for calling in, too, as well and stuff. Let's patch in with another fight fans. Area code 510. You're on live right now and Leaving the Ring, brother. What's on your mind?
Dave, how you doing? This is Sal Acevedo. ¿Cómo estamos?
Hey, Sal, how you doing, brother?
Doing great, enjoying the show, but you know what? Don't mean to take the spotlight away a little bit here, but we're ready for our own show in Espanol tomorrow. How about that?
Hey, exactly. Fight fans, you're listening right now. We got the co-host for Leaving the Ring Espanol. That's going to be airing, premiering tomorrow night at 5 o'clock West Coast time, 8 o'clock East Coast time. We're going to have Adner Mares and Yanni Perez. And Joel Diaz call in and Fernando Montiel call in to speak to these guys. And it's all in Spanish. So for our Spanish-speaking listeners that have hit us up and asked us if we're going to do any transcripts in Spanish, no need, because Leaving the Ring is going to be all in Espanol with Sal.
That's right. Tomorrow we start, Dave, at 5 p.m., like you said, Monday, our first show. Great show, Johnny Perez, Abner Mares, and yes, we just confirmed the great Fernando Montiel. So what can we tell the fans? This is a dream come true. It was something that we've been working on, you know, Dave, for a long time. We are ready to give the Spanish-speaking audience a show that is for them in their language. So all these great interviews that we hear on Leave It in the Ring, all these exclusive interviews and all this great boxing coverage, now they can hear it in Spanish, and now it's in their language, and we have a great group, myself, Sal Acevedo, we have Ramon Aranda, and we have Joe Surratt. All three, we have a great passion for boxing. Not only that, we've been working with boxing for many years, and we bring a lot of motivation, okay, to this show that we just can't wait to get started. I really hope that we have a lot of these Spanish listeners out there joining us in tomorrow. I'll say it in Spanish, so in case any Spanish speakers are out there listening. Mañana tenemos el primer show, Leave It in the Ring, en español. Es para ustedes, es un programa que les vamos a traer toda la información boxística, entrevistas exclusivas, y toda la información que usted escucha aquí en Living in the Ring va a ser ahora en español. Mañana a las 5 p.m., tiempo del Pacífico, nos podrán escuchar a mí, un servidor, Sal Acevedo, tenemos a Ramón Aranda, tenemos a Joe Surratt, y básicamente le estamos trayendo a ustedes todo lo que quieren escuchar en relación al boxeo, al pugilismo. Tendremos mañana como invitados especiales a Johnny Pérez, a Abner Mares y a Fernando Montiel. So, por favor, escúchenos mañana, sintonícenos a las 5 p.m. en Tiempo del Pacífico. Ojalá que estén allí para que pongan sus llamadas y participen en este gran show. So, Dave, what can we say? We're excited.
La Cocina. I used to work with this old-timer that was, an Irish dude, and he didn't speak any Spanish and stuff. And anytime he would say something, he heard a couple people speaking Spanish, he would say, La Cocina, because that was the only word he knew. So I know a couple of my listeners right now are going, see, they don't even know what you're talking about. Anyway.
Hey, you know what, Dave? I encourage those that audience to tune in tomorrow, and they're going to probably learn more words than just La Cocina.
Hey, there you go. Exactly, man. Hey, Sal, well, I got you on right now. And fight fans, please tune in tomorrow and support the Spanish version of Leaving in the Ring. What were your thoughts? Did you have a chance to watch Paul Williams and Sergio Martinez? What was your take and your thoughts about that fight, brother?
You know, Dave, I'm listening to you say, ask the caller before me, say, did you see that coming? Wow. I had just gotten up to grab me something to eat and sit down and enjoy about another 10 rounds of great, back and forth one-on-one boxing, toe-to-toe, and all of a sudden I look at the TV and Paul Williams is just laid out. Unbelievable. You know, Sergio Martinez, I mean, what can you say of the guy? You know, he is as a classy, as humble of a fighter as they come. And you know, not to take anything away from Paul Williams, but Sergio Martinez is just right
yep.
now. He's just on fire, man. I mean, the guy trains religiously. He prepares himself. He's just mentally so self-confident, you know. Wow. Amazing. You know, the question is now, what's next for Sergio?
I think that's what we're all trying to figure out at this particular moment, Sal. Hey, Sal, I know that you're busy. You have something going on today. I appreciate you calling in, brother, and I can't wait for tomorrow night. That's Monday at 5 o'clock West Coast time, 8 o'clock East Coast time. They're going to have four guests coming through. You have Arnold Morris, Yanni Perez, Joel Diaz, the trainer, Timothy Bradley, and Arnold Morris, and Fernando Montiel, who's got a fight coming up pretty soon with Nonito Nair if he's successful in his next fight on the top rank undercard. So take it easy, brother.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Dave. Continue the show. Continue the great job. And just a reminder to all those Spanish-speaking fans out there, please join us. Please join us. We have a unique, professional, and a very entertaining show for you tomorrow. Take care, everyone.
There you go. Oops. Anyways, so back. Gabe, you there, brother, or did you fall off again?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you and stuff. We got a lot of calls calling in right now. Fans do want to be patched in. So let's just patch in a few more callers here, Gabe. Let's go with area code 317. You're on live right now and Leaving in the Ring, brother. What's on your mind? 317, you're on live right now, brother.
Hello?
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 What's up, brother?
Oh, man, I'm just calling. They got to do something with Sergio, man. He Like I told Lou, I tweeted him and said, you got to get him in some real fights because boxing needs stars, man. That was wow, man. And I think I tweeted you last night, man. Tell Sergio, don't do that again. He's giving us black guys a bad rep. that was ugly, bro. That was ugly. But Paul Williams, he's an exciting fighter. But then again, that's what it comes down to. I mean, he's a flawed fighter. He's too tall to be trying to fight inside. And to say I saw it coming, I can't say that. But I knew that it's a chance of that fighting. I mean, that happening in any of his fights because of the way he fights. He fights inside, and he has a wingspan of 82 inches. So the further he moves up in weight, the more likely something like that was going to happen is what I saw kind of, man.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with him, though, is, Riddick Bowe was a really good infighter for a guy with a long reach, a tall heavyweight, and he could fight on the inside. I think it's just that Paul didn't really make good adjustments. I questioned over this whole period of the building of Paul Williams whether or not he was being built correctly or fixing the problems fight to fight. Why couldn't he be? When you got with an 83-inch reach or 82-inch reach, why are you fighting inside? Why are you letting him come inside is really the thing. When he could have stood on the outside with Martinez and made his jab a problem to solve, and he didn't. It was like he threw a few jabs, and then he just really wanted to get it on and brawl. It almost felt like, you know, the next round, a continuation of the last fight, and they just picked up right where they left off, only Martinez studied the tape, saw a bunch of things in Williams, and made an adjustment, and Paul really didn't. I mean, if you really look at the way he throws the hook, in particular, that's the punch that he got, I think, knocked out throwing.
Right.
It comes like way off of his chin from the outside. It takes forever to get in. If you're inside, though, you should be tighter guard, and it should come off the chin, just come right off, and it has nowhere to travel but to your opponent's face. And
exactly. That
way you're also set up for defense where you can just kind of catch it, maybe counter with the other hand. I mean, that's just boxing 101.
And it seemed like Martinez and his crew trained for that. They were waiting for that opportunity to land that punch because the punch was just so perfect. Like, they waited for him to get inside, and he made that point. But my last thing is, as far as Berto and Manny Pacquiao, I don't know if you covered that yet because I just got in here. But they were talking about trying to get that fight together. I know a lot of people are saying, what has Berto done to earn that fight? But I'm saying, what has a lot of people done to earn? I mean, what did Margarito do to get that fight? I mean, he looked like a bum in his last fight before that, and he got caught cheating in the one before that. So,
yeah, and
I mean,
what did Martinez do to win his shots, really? He kind of came out of nowhere.
So sometimes, I mean, you just got to put it on the line. And plus, you got to have fighters who are going to fight. I know one thing, if you put Berto in there, he's at least going to try to fight. That's all I got, bro.
I hear what you're saying, and I agree with you. But my argument is this, is I haven't said what has he done to get a fight with Pacquiao. What I've said is, what have we seen that he can keep Manny Pacquiao off of him? You know what I mean?
Okay, I don't think he wins. I think he gets knocked out in eight. That's kind of why I like the fight.
I just like to see exciting fights, and I know Berto's going to bring it. I mean, that's all I'm saying. I know he's going to bring it. He's not going to get in there and get big. He's not going to do a Joshua Clotty. You know what I'm saying? But the Tim Bradley or whatever you said, I think that would be a good fight too, but
let's not forget, though, that Berto is with the Al Haymon camp, and that same camp represents Floyd Mayweather that was asking for a test. So will they do that with Berto and Pacquiao, and will Pacquiao accept it? You know what I mean? I think that's what leaves it all down to if Manny Pacquiao and his team, Freddie Roach and Top Rank, go, hey, let's go after Berto. I don't know. There might be another block there for us to see a potential explosive fight if these guys meet.
Well, you know how Al works, man. So
yeah,
I mean, you never know. I don't want to say too much, but we, you know. So yeah, that's what I got for you, bro.
Well, it'd be interesting to see if they made a Berto fight, if Al would ask for blood testing in that fight.
Yeah,
they were so concerned about Manny that time. Yeah, it's very true. You know, and we'll see if it's just a Floyd thing, it's an Al thing. I've heard it was an Al thing.
Right.
You know, I like the fight. If you look at Bob Arum, I mean, it's kind of the time to strike with that fight because I think it's very winnable for Pacquiao. Yeah, it's kind of feeding an Al fighter, but if he wins, man, Al's power base is kind of you know, kind of cut down until Andre Durrell recovers and comes back, and Paul Williams has to come back, and there's a lot of rebuilding going on. I mean, Al's taking some hits. You know, Danny Jacobs has to come back and do something. You know, so it's, I don't know, if you're looking at it from a behind-the-scenes warfare, it's a good move.
Yep. Yep, yeah. Absolutely. Well, brother, thank you for calling in, man. I'm going to put you back on hold, okay?
Right on, bro.
You know, we still got a lot of callers in right now, so let's patch them in before we get our first couple of guests that are going to be calling in around 3 o'clock, which is going to be the Miami Gallos, who are going to have a fight coming up in L.A. at the Club Nokia against L.A.'s very own Matadors. It should be explosive. Last night, if you missed the Premier of Mexico versus Memphis, you missed something great. It was fantastic, man. There was some good fights on there and stuff, and but before I patch in the next caller, let's talk really quick. I don't know if you had a chance, Gable, to watch the IBF Junior Bantamweight Eliminator bout between Raul Martinez, who won a 12-round split decision against Rigo Guerrero. I'm trying to read everything everybody's throwing at. It's throwing me off, man. Stop texting me and stop throwing everything at me, man.
I didn't get a chance to see it. I'm gonna see it when I get home. Or actually maybe later on tonight while I wait to board a plane. I'm kind of thrown.
Well, you know,
this is my first
I got
time
that
on the East Coast, and you said 3 o'clock, and it's 6 o'clock over here. It's kind of trippy.
Yeah, you know, I haven't had a chance to. I started watching it, then I stopped it, and I've been so busy today. But I'm going to go back and watch it after the show. But I heard it was a great fight. I heard that, you know, Raul Martinez came from behind, and, you know, and he was just, you know, there was going back and forth. But I did hear, you know, from some fight fans that they thought it was a lot closer than what it was being read off. You know, two of the scorecards were 15-13. One was for Guerrero was 117-111. But obviously it was Martinez who was the victor in that fight. You know, fight fans, if you had a chance to see that fight, call in and tell us what you guys' thoughts about that fight, you know, so that we know more or less.
Yeah, Martinez is a guy that's just, he's just like instant fight of the year candidate, you know, I mean, he just, every time you put him in, he's just all action, dude. But I imagine, you know, I haven't seen the fight. I haven't really read much about it. I just heard that it's really, really good. And I kind of, this trip to Atlantic City was kind of last minute for me, and it's been kind of a whirlwind of travel, and then I finally settled in. I barely got into AC a few hours before the fight, it's just been kind of like nonstop. I mean, it's kind of cool. You know, I'm not complaining, but I haven't really even sat in front of a TV or anything like that. I didn't bring my laptop either, just my phone. So that's kind of been hard, too. So, but, sorry, I'm in transit again. So my mind's kind of wandering.
Hey, no problem,
kind of,
man. Let's,
I'm
let me patch
settling
in.
Into my secure building here.
Let me patch in another caller. Right now, like I said, the phone lines are open, 347-215-7598. Let's let in area code 973. You're on live right now and leaving in the ring.
Hey, how you doing? It's Ness GTO.
What's up, bro?
Oh, man. Excited about what happened yesterday. I am totally shocked. I know no one expected that. I was expecting a unanimous decision for Paul, and I thought he would make the correct adjustments, but
you're calling me?
Are you hearing?
Sorry. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Could you guys
keep going,
brother. Yeah, so I feel like Paul Williams, it's going to be pretty hard for him to come back. I was reading some articles yesterday and checking out the post-fight interviews, a press conference, rather, and Goosen Tudor is saying that he's no longer going to fight at middleweight anymore. They're gonna keep him at welterweight now. So it looks like a rubber match is not going to happen. And I think that's probably the best bet for him, you know, because he did come in looking a little bulkier than normal.
Right.
But he just didn't make any adjustments. I mean, it looked like they picked up round 13 of the first fight. He didn't change anything, and his punches weren't landing flush. They were more like slapping hooks, and Martinez just amazed everyone, and a star is born. And where does he go from here now? I don't know, because 160 is basically dry right now. And I just wanted to say for the people that didn't know, it was reported yesterday that Fernando Guerrero sold about 2,300 of those 5,202 tickets.
Hmm.
And it's shocking that we didn't even get a highlight of his fourth-round knockout.
Right, right, exactly.
And he's somewhere in that weight. I believe he's 154 or 160, his last fight with Ishe Smith. So, you know, not saying that he's ready for Martinez, but we should have got some type of highlights from there. But as far as the Berto Pacquiao, I see that as a one-sided fight for Pacquiao. I'm agreeing with all the fight fans on Twitter. Berto doesn't deserve it, but we're willing to watch Berto get in there just so we could see him lose. Now, would Al Haymon do it after taking the loss with Danny Jacobs and Williams? I don't think he's ready to lose another. And don't forget Andre Durrell, but I don't think he's ready to lose.
And Chris the Nightmare.
Berto, too. I don't think
yeah.
he's ready to lose Berto, too, in his stable. But I'm not saying it would be a good fight, but I'm just so desperately want to see Berto fight a quality opponent that I won't even have, you know, any discrepancy with it. I would just rather watch it and be happy with it because I'm tired of HBO putting him in there with no contenders, just prospects. I mean, his only contender to date is Luis Collazo and Quintana, if you want to count that.
Right.
And we don't know what he can do. And all we know is that he mimics Floyd Mayweather as far as the way that he talks, as if he has beaten the top guys. So, you know, I would definitely love to see him get knocked out, like Gabe said, in the eighth round. Hopefully a lot sooner, maybe a Ricky Hatton replay with Pacquiao and Berto. But definitely take my hat off to Martinez. He did a wonderful job. I'm happy for him because he's been in, you know, with the draw that he got robbed with Cintron. And, you know, the first fight with Williams could have went either way. So I'm happy that he's getting his just deserved now. I mean, he's coming off a destruction of Pavlik and a demolishment of Williams. So I really don't know where else could he go now because I know Mayweather or Pacquiao's not getting in there. That's just out of the question.
No, I don't think so either. I know there was a few people saying that Floyd was looking at Martinez, but like I told one guy on Twitter, a few guys on Twitter, I said, well, he was following him. He just unfollowed after what Martinez did to Paul Williams.
I know exactly who you're talking about. That was Carcino. But you know Carcino's like he's like Floyd Mayweather's girlfriend, so he's going to say anything pro-Floyd. He's going to say anything pro Floyd, and I just don't believe it. I don't see it happening. And if it does, Martinez went on the record yesterday stating that he would go down to 156, the lowest for a Pacquiao or Mayweather fight, and I hope that he doesn't. I mean, he's the champ, and he's proven that he's the champ. He already went down to make this fight just to basically solidify what happened in the first fight, that he was robbed. Or that it could have been a draw, and he put basically a period at the end of the sentence with this one. I don't think he needs to go down to make a fight. I mean, everyone's
but here's the thing, though, is that he only wants to fight two more years and be done, and really three, four fights max. A fight with Pacquiao is really winnable for him,
right?
And it's a ton of money. So,
but
I
at what cost,
like
though,
that,
Gabriel? At what cost, though? I mean, let's be honest here. You know, I know there's a lot of people that love Manny Pacquiao, and he does a fantastic job in the ring. But let's look at all the things that they have to have in order to have the advantage, or in order for them to want to sink their teeth in. At what cost? Would it be at 160, would it be at 154? I highly doubt it. I think Freddie Roach would probably ask him to come down to a ridiculous weight, which would probably be 149 to 150, where they know they have a dead man walking. I think that's
I don't think that DiBello would do that. I don't think he realizes what he's got in his fighter. And he even said, like, I don't want to do catch weights with this guy. You know, like, it's basically saying the title's for sale when you do that. But if they went 156, I mean, Sergio, they said they had a meal early in the day, and he was a little bit over the weight, like by a pound, the 158 catch weight. And he ate a little bit too big of a meal, had to go drop, you know, a pound, and then weighed in. They didn't seem to have that much of a problem with the weight. They were mad that they had to do it to get the fight, but I don't think ultimately people that thought he was being sacrificed or his body was. I think people look, and I was one of those people, maybe have read too much into his body and what his body can do. He thinks he can make, he can get lower, you know, not 154, but I mean, I think there's some play in there in his weight, you know, and for, you know, however much money, $20 million, $15 million, I think he'd be willing to take the shot. 149, 150, though, hell no. Yeah,
no.
I don't think he does.
Well,
yeah.
For me, Gabe, in a perfect world, I know that HBO invested a lot. Williams has been fighting under HBO banner for, I don't know, all but maybe 5 years now. So I would say that since Martinez has come on HBO and basically took in the star, hopefully they can invest some money in Martinez now, get him these ridiculous numbers that they're giving Berto, pay someone who deserves it, and just have him clear out 160. Have him take on Strong. Have him take on Prirog. And maybe a Margarito rematch if Margarito is able to come back. Not saying that he is, but it's something that would sell for the Mexican Latino crowd because he's beat Martinez in the past, maybe, I don't know, 8-10 years ago. And now he's the champion. It will probably entice Bob Arum because being as though there's nowhere else for Margarito to go besides Cotto. And we don't know. We don't think Cotto's going to take that. So maybe that could happen.
Well,
but I mean,
that fight though, it's kind of a double standard to fans. Then if we make that fight though, because then it's
what?
Then you go, well, what did Margarito do to deserve a shot at the middleweight title after getting the hell beat out of him by Manny Pacquiao?
Right.
If he didn't deserve that fight, you know, why would he deserve this fight? And he has no record as a middleweight. To me, I'd rather go after, you know, I don't know if Pirog's ready for him. But I think he'd be a hell of a challenge for Martinez, and he wants
right.
to fight on HBO, you know. You know what it reminds me of is he doesn't really have an opponent, but you know, the end of Jerry Maguire, and after, you know, Rod Tidwell has made his big catch, and he got hurt, and he comes back, and everybody loves him. And Jerry Maguire looks at the head coach who's been stonewalling him all the time, all the movie about it, you know, no contract. And they make eye contact, and Jerry looks at him and gives him the money sign with his hands, like, you're going to have to pay me. I almost got that sense from DiBella looking at Terry Davis. It was kind of that moment. Who was in the room was basically like, all right, you guys played hardball. You tried to steal this championship from my fighter. Now you're going to have to pay me. And I think, you know, Montevideo maybe even deserves kind of a lower-level fight, you know. You know, you throw him in with, you know, some of the lesser guys at 160 for one fight because he's had a lot of tough fights here, you know, in a row.
Right.
And then you... And you pay him well. Pay him like an Al Haymon fighter. And you know, treat him like a champion for once. Announce him second.
This is,
put him in the red corner, you know?
Think about this. This is the crazy thing here. And DJ, I got to put you on hold, okay? Because I think we're going to be having our first... Come on. So just stay on hold, brother. Don't hang up. This is the crazy part here. And I want fight fans to really think about this. Manny Pacquiao versus Floyd Mayweather. A big, huge money fight. Martinez versus Pacquiao, big money fight. Martinez versus Floyd, big money fight. We have three of the biggest money fights right there to be materialized. But yet, it's so far from it ever happening. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
These are dream fights for us that we wish could happen, but are probably never going to happen. And if they do, it's going to be too late in the game where the fire has dimmed. It's no longer burnt, you know?
Yeah, you know, and it's like, okay, the people are going to be really pissed at me saying this, but at this point, the way Floyd has acted and avoided Manny Pacquiao, the biggest fight, do you really give him the middleweight title shot? I mean, if he's the face of boxing, where is he? He's at home on vacation. And I don't really want to see Pacquiao Martinez. I don't think it's that... I think it's an interesting fight in terms of styles and everything. But Manny's small. He's not a middleweight.
I like that fight.
Know?
I really do. I like the congressman versus the gentleman. I don't know. I see something
that's
there.
That's a good title.
You know,
But Floyd versus Montevideo isn't more even fight. And it's a tough fight. It's a stylistic fight.
How is that, though? Floyd is not that big of a welterweight himself, though, Gabe.
He looks like he's really grown into the weight. And I would say that he weighed in at middleweight the night of...
Shane Mosley.
The night of the Shane Mosley fight. He looks like a much bigger man to me. It certainly looks more like a full-blown welterweight than more so than Manny does to me.
Well,
you know what?
I think with Manny, him going in with Margarito, you obviously saw the size difference, but Manny just came in at 144, which was really odd. But we've seen him a lot bigger than that. Going in with Cotto, he looked like the much bigger man. Going in with Kaladi, he looked pretty even with him. I don't know. I'm really curious and how well they would move up. And you know, and it seems that the Alex Ariza has had his way of you know, I'm not going to say he's taking some juice and all that, because we don't know that. You know, I'm not going to accuse somebody. But whatever methods that he's using to help out Manny, it's obviously been very beneficial for Manny Pacquiao. But let me, Gabe, let me see if we have our first guest on. Let me check. Area code 347, you're live right now on Leaving in the Ring. Hello, are you there? Area code 347. We'll take calls right now. Area code 347. You got something on your mind? You can talk to us right here on Leaving the Ring. You're live. No. Okay. All right. Well, they haven't called in yet, so we will definitely wait for the callers to call in. But going right back to Gabe and what we were talking about with the size difference. I'll be honest, and this is going to sound terrible, but I wouldn't mind seeing a catchweight between Pacquiao and Martinez, even with Floyd Mayweather. You know what I'm saying? Where it's something that none of us do really like, but just to see that fight happen, where you got three of the best fighters in the world giving the fight fans what they want, which are super fights. Now, a lot of times these fights are labeled super fights where they're not really super fights. They're just put on pay-per-view just to draw more money to the promotional company and the network. Where these three particular fights should be able to draw the crowds that boxing has been lacking for some time, and where the casual fight fans could say, hey, you know, these are not just one-sided fights happening on pay-per-view. You know, I don't know. Gabe, you still there?
I was on mute. Sorry about that. I was been moving around, so I didn't want you know, all the noise to come on the radio.
That's a thing. We didn't have as many pay-per-views in the last couple of years, though, you know? And, like, this year, how many have we had on HBO? We've had the Pacquiao fights, which are always HBO. And, you know, I actually thought the Claudi fight shouldn't have been a pay-per-view fight. That should have been World Championship Boxing. Give us one back. I mean, we're kind of used to every time we see these guys, it's pay-per-view. That's
right.
Kind of, you know, it has to cover their large salaries and everything. At some point, you know, I'd like to see them give back to the fans. Like, that's the thing with Floyd is, like, you know, he took a tune-up with Marquez. He turned Marquez into a tune-up type opponent, both by his performance but also making him come up in weight, you know, two divisions at his age. Why not just take a tune-up on World Championship Boxing and kind of give one back to us? That's the thing to me, is that him in particular, and really even Manny too, who kind of puts on this face, I just want people to be happy. But I mean, where's the elite fighter at 154 that you beat for that belt? You beat Margarito.
Right.
You know, I mean, come on. And the Cotto fight, it's like, well, okay, but like, why don't you, I don't know, defend and have a reign at 147 as opposed to taking one belt and then moving. And then calling it a title, which I don't recognize that title nor the 154-pound title. You know, it's
right.
Just they're paper belts. I'm kind of on a rant. Sorry, I'm all over the place today. I'm running all over.
No,
the place,
I tend to agree with you on that. There, I think that this whole, you know, giving titles away, like like you going to a clinic to get condoms, is just ridiculous, man. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
and the sort of colors.
Well, you know what it is. It's like they show up to 154, they beat somebody, and it's like, you know, it's like going to an amusement park and getting a 50-cent coin and having it engraved with, you know, the Disneyland or something. Like, you've been here and here's your belt to prove it. You know, you made it to 154 and you beat somebody. But did he beat a champion? No, he didn't. You know, he beat a former champion, Margarito, and at 145, the Manny weight. Welterweight, you know, Cotto got a belt from Michael Jennings, of all people. It was a vacant belt. It meant nothing other than, hey, I've been there and I was in a tough fight, and all I got was this belt, you know, and a lot of money. If people will say that denigrates Manny Pacquiao, I'm sorry. You know, I think he's a great fighter. He's a once-in-a-lifetime talent, but you got to call them like they are. And it's like you're saying, like getting back to where should we put Manny in history? I'm like, well, that's kind of up to him. You know, he needs to fight Floyd Mayweather. And Floyd needs to remove some of the roadblocks and just make the damn fight so we can place them both. Because the only way you can really place a guy is if he fights everybody. And Manny, you know, he's been fighting a lot of dudes, you know, a lot of his contemporaries. Claudy, as crappy as he may be, is a contemporary. You know, Cotto is as well. Even though there's a, you know, there's a weight drain there with the 145. But where's Floyd's fights with his contemporaries? You know, he's got the Mosley fight. But there's a lot of good guys around that weight class, and he's ignoring them. And it's really hard to place him. It's, I think, hurting his legacy by waiting and waiting and not fighting dudes. You know, that just, and it's frustrating more than anything, because people think I hate Floyd. I don't. I just want to see him in great fights. I want to be able to bust out the DVD collection at the end and go, let me see. I want to watch Mayweather Pacquiao 1, you know, and then I want to watch Mayweather Pacquiao 2 and maybe Mayweather Williams or, you know, like that. That's the DVD collection I want to watch. Is
because exactly.
I can do that with Roberto Duran and Marvin Hagler and Tommy Hearns and Sugar Ray Leonard. I can do that with them. And all the old school guys, if you could get film of them. Can't do it with
exactly.
Floyd past 135. And it's just frustrating.
You know,
I'm
mean,
at my secure location. I'm getting ready to get ready for the airport here. Maybe I should I wait until the guests come on and then I'll jettison.
Yeah, if you can and stuff, because the topic I want to bring up right now, I'd like to get you involved in this one here. And then fight fans, too, if you want to call back in at 347-215-7598, you certainly can. We have the phone lines open while we're waiting for our guests to call in, the Miami Gallos, who got a fight coming up in the Club Nokia in L.A., downtown L.A., against L.A.'s very own Matadors. But let's talk about a little bit about these belts in here. And the thing that I wanted to talk about was the Ring Magazine had issued a couple years back, more than a couple years back, a Ring Magazine belt to really honestly clear up the confusion of all these alphabet assorted color belts that are being given out like condoms here. And how quickly has it been diminished since being bought out by Golden Boy? It's no longer even being referenced as who's got the ring belt. HBO does not even bring it up. ESPN doesn't bring it up. Showtime doesn't bring it up. It doesn't even come out of the mouths of boxing fans anymore. What happened there, Gable? What happened to this belt that we once, or this magazine that we once called the Bible of Boxing? I mean, it seems to me that the Bible of Boxing is now these underground websites, you know, more or less the fans that are communicating with the Facebook and coming on the radio show. We seem to have more of the general idea of who are the real factual champions, or all these other associated people that are in the business seem to try to keep putting these blindfolds on us and sell these champions that are just more or less paper champions.
Yeah, I mean, I actually had this conversation last night. We were talking about, not really particularly your angle on it, which I think is really interesting, but the about the ring. And somebody was trying to argue with me that, you know, it's still the Bible of boxing. And I just said, you know, they can't be. They're owned by a promoter. And whether or not, and I'm not saying that, you know, Richard Schaefer calls down to the ring and says, hey, you know, so-and-so write this, or you write, or we need you to cover this with this slant. I don't think that necessarily happens, but it's just the nature of the association. Because there's that doubt there, what are we supposed to think? What are we supposed to say? It can't be the Bible of boxing and owned by a promoter. It's sort of like saying that HBO is the height of boxing and it's very pure, except that Al Heyman runs it. You know, you just can't do it. And when you do, you look at Twitter and the way our sport, I think more than any other, has been a pioneer in internet coverage. You know, guys like Steve Kim and Doug Fisher, Gary Randall, even to some extent, you know, Greg Leone, you give him some props for kind of being the original TMZ of boxing. And the guy actually joined boxing, became an advisor. That's kind of an interesting story. But these guys are the pioneers of internet boxing, covering it on the web. And they were kind of doing that before any other sport really had caught on to it. And they kind of kept it alive. I do kind of look at these guys as people that you know, when they say that this is who the top guy is, I mean, I think there's some weight there. But you also see Twitter and Facebook, and, you know, the fans all know what fights they want to see. If the promoters were paying attention and HBO was paying attention, well, I know Kerry Davis pays attention to tweets because he said that last night. But, you know, if they could really tune in to what we want and give us that, our sport would have no problems, in my opinion. Certainly not in America.
Right.
It would have no problems. I don't think Twitter and Facebook has really caught on as well, or Twitter as much in the UK as it has here. I hear it's now starting to. But even in terms of their boxing coverage and all that stuff. But here, I mean, I just think there's a wealth of knowledge for all the promoters and fight managers and everybody that's on that side of the boxing, behind the camera or behind the scenes, to look and see what could I give the sport that would be best for it.
Mm-hmm.
And they tend to ignore it. You know, Oscar is tweeting out all this stuff, you know, all the time on there. You know, it's blaming Bob Arum, or, you know, I want to just make the best fights. But I don't see a lot of, you know, replies. Interact with the fans and ask them what they want. And when they tell you, respond to it. And then
Absolutely.
Give it to them.
You know, absolutely.
That's what I would do.
You know,
you know,
I mean,
boxing, dude, if you and I ran it, dude, we'd have good fights every week.
Oh, man.
A lot
you
of
know,
short careers, but we would have
yeah,
good
definitely.
Fights every week.
I mean, you know, Bernard Hopkins on there saying Manny Pacquiao needs to fight a slick fighter. Which was a complete turnoff from him coming from him. I understand what he's trying to do. He's trying to sell a fight with Mosley, saying that, you know, he needs an African-American fighter to be in front of Manny Pacquiao. But the thing is this, is that is obviously – it's actually an old debate. It was started on Leaving the Ring when Nate Campbell called in and said that. It did start up a friends among the boxing community and stuff, and you know, as we threw it up on YouTube and people kind of follow it. Now it's trying to resurface. And my thing is this, is that, you know, what is, I don't understand what exactly that's going to prove if Manny fights an African American that is slick, because right now currently there are no slick African Americans in the welterweight division. You know, Berto's not a slick fighter. I don't view him as a slick fighter. He's got fast hands, and you've seen him use those fast hands. You don't see the whole defense.
Yeah.
Only African American out there that is slick is Floyd Mayweather, and Floyd is obviously not in the mind frame of getting back into the ring. He's got a lot of stuff on his plate called the court systems. You know, I mean, this guy's looking at some time here, you know, and
well, look at last night, because he was talking about the African American, not the African straight up African fighter, but the African American, the urban guy that has all those veteran tricks and fights a little, you know, with some soul and some nasty, you know, nitty gritty. Well, one of those guys got knocked out last night. By a guy that was actually not black, but very slick, you know. And Paul Williams, African American fighter from D.C., you know, fights out of here. Doesn't really get that much, you know, more inner city and African American than that. And he got knocked the hell out. I just think Hopkins probably misspeaks himself the way Oscar mistweets himself. You know, it's just like, dude, just stop talking. You know, just fight. Actually, don't fight. Please stop fighting and please stop talking. I do enjoy Bernard Hopkins at press conferences, but when he tries to make blanket statements like that, it's just kind of ridiculous. And it's funny coming from a guy that said, no white boy is ever going to beat me, and then he lost to a white boy. You know, it's just, you know, it's just kind of funny to me. And his big win that everybody goes, wow, let's elevate him to all-time greatness late in his career, was against the guy that's the anti-slick fighter, Kelly Pavlik. You know,
right.
he's not even like no special effects. Dude's in black and white with, like, you know, rabbit ears on top of him and some tinfoil on the antennas, you know. So, you know, Bernard, please just stop.
Just quit. Just
yeah.
quick.
Yeah.
I think we do have our guests calling in right now. Let me see. I believe I have Kenny. Are you there?
Well, Kenny's not here right now, but yes, Siju Shabazz.
Shabazz, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing great, sir.
Now, Shabazz is a light heavyweight for the Miami Gallos, and you got some fights coming up, a very interesting program that you guys have here. Hey, Shabazz, let me ask you this. No headgear, smaller gloves, three-minute rounds for five rounds. Now, in terms of amateur, I know a lot of fight fans, this is what got me very intrigued into this whole thing you guys are doing here, you know, having four teams made up for each individual company and country, and you guys are going to be going at it. You guys are going up against the Matadors, and but my concern here is, and I don't know if you've thought about this with your team, Shabazz, is the headgear and the smaller gloves. Do you guys feel that it will shorten up your guys' career, though, when you decide to turn pro? Will that shorten up your career?
Uh, That's a big possibility that it could shorten up our careers because we're going to be fighting a whole lot more than we would if we were in the normal professional rankings. But I think it's going to advance our career as well. Like, we're going to move up in our career a lot faster than if we were to go through the pro ranks fighting a bunch of bums to start our career.
Right. Now, being that it's 3 minutes, and we know, I mean, I'm an amateur guy. I like going down and watching because you get some of the best fights in the amateur rankings, you know, when you go down and you watch the conventions and stuff. And every time you see those 2 minutes, you guys, you see the amateur guys, you know, and putting yourself in that category there, you guys go all out because you know it's a point system. You have to let everything go. There is no holding back. Now, though, it's 3 minutes, and then it's still kind of in the same track run because you can't really, honestly, have fill-out rounds because of the fact you guys are still going off of a point system, correct?
Yeah. But it's professional scoring, not point system.
Oh, okay. Well, then I got that wrong. See, I thought they were going off of the amateur point system. I didn't think they were going to go with the professional point system. No. Well, let me ask you, cuts and bruises, that is obviously something going to be new for you, right? I mean, and for the rest of the team, cuts and bruises. Do you feel you guys are prepared for? Are you prepared for something like that?
Yes, sir. I'm more than prepared for that. I'm excited for it. Like, cuts and bruises, yeah, you get them a little bit, and now we're going to get them a little more, probably like headbutts and stuff like that. But we have good trainers. We got good people to take care of us and patch us up. And there's also 3 guys in every weight class, so if someone gets cut or something, then they'll have a little break in order to heal up in time for his next match.
Now, Shabazz, you're out of New Mexico. How did it come about you to get down to Miami to represent the Miami team?
That's just the team I got drafted to. I got picked up by the Miami team. I was entered into the WSB. They asked me if I would join. I told them yes after a little while of waiting because the contract was unclear for a while. But then after a little while of waiting, I signed up. I said yes, and that's just the team that drafted me. I had no choice of where I wanted to go.
Sparring, obviously, you're wearing the headgear. You got bigger gloves. When you're sparring, are you going into what, 14-ounce gloves, 16-ounce gloves?
We wear 18.
18, okay. Now though, going to the semi-pro competition here, you guys are going down to what, 10-ounce gloves?
10-ounce gloves, yes, sir.
10-ounce gloves, no headgear. Shabazz, if you're successful, they've already promised that you automatically have a running in the 2012 Olympic Games in London. But that means you got to go back with the heavier gloves and headgear. Does that mess you up? I mean, because 1 minute you're free of all the headgear and the extra padding in the gloves, and the next you're back into that same boat. That meaning that you have to readjust again in the feeling out of things,
yeah,
in the ring, right?
Yes, sir. But I don't think that'll be such a problem because, like you said, we are sparring with the bigger gloves and the headgear. So anytime we're working out, working in the gym, we're having those bigger gloves. It's only fight night, one fight, 5 rounds that we're going with the smaller gloves and the no headgear. So jumping back into the competition with the headgear and a little bit bigger gloves on isn't going to be much a problem, I don't think.
Any of the other guys that are representing the other teams from, you know, Mexico, Guerreros, from the Memphis Force to the LA Matadors, have you had a chance to get in the ring with them in previous amateur bouts, or maybe you were, you know, in another team with them in the past?
Yes, sir. I have fought a couple of them, been on a team with a couple of them as well. I'm really looking forward to fighting them in this new league without the headgear and the extra protection.
So, Shabazz, let me ask you this. Out of all the guys you've mixed it up with, they're in your division, the light heavyweight division. Which one of those guys do you feel that is your more concerned about at the moment? I mean, a guy that you have to more or less focus and watch for. The guy that right now is keeping the motivation for you to be in this tournament that you think is going to give you the tally of showing that, you know what, I'm the best in the division, but I got to prove it by fighting this guy.
To be honest, I believe that the fighters overseas, they're a lot stronger a lot bigger than the fighters I've competed against here in the States at light heavyweight. So what's keeping me motivated is the fighters overseas. They're the ones that are like, oh, I got to be better than these guys. I got to, because within the fighters here in the state, I honestly believe that I'm one of the best that I can beat them all. I feel like I beat them all in the amateur fighting, and I feel like I've been the tougher one, the stronger one, and I feel like I.
So let's say you complete this, and let's just say after having no headgear, no gloves, okay, you won. Now you have the chance of going to the 2012 Olympics. But a major promoter like the likes of Top Rank to Golden Boy, even Goose and Tudor to Lou DiBella, they come along and said, hey, Shahbaz, listen, we've been watching you. You've made enough noise. Because in my honest opinion, I think that this franchise, the World of Boxing Series, is going to make a lot of noise. It's going to give the amateur guys back what was lost in the 80s, which is the exposure of building superstars in the United States and in other countries, okay? So you're approached by these promoters, and they say, listen, you've already had the chance of tasting punches without headgear. You've already had the chance of tasting fighting with smaller gloves. Why continue the Olympics? We gave you a major deal. Is there a repercussion if you decide not to continue and follow through at the 2012 Olympics in London? If turning pro, do you get penalized?
Do we get penalized if we turn pro, you're saying?
Yeah.
Instead of not going to the Olympics?
Yes.
I don't think we would get penalized, no. But I don't see any of us that would want to do that. Like, who would not want to go to the Olympics and represent their country in the Olympics? That's more lucrative, more honoring than just turning pro, I would believe, in my eyes.
You guys are getting a certain amount of money to make sure you continue to stay in the amateur rankings, right? Now,
yes, sir.
Was that the selling point for you, for yourself, you know, speaking for yourself, was that the selling point of staying amateur, or was there any plans of going pro at all?
That wasn't the selling point for me. And now, like me, I'm not even worried about the money. I don't care about money. I read in my Bible, you can't love money and love God at the same time. So I have no love for money. I don't need it. God provides what I need. The selling point for me was the fact that I get to fight professional, fight all these guys that I fought in the amateurs, and they won by pity pat point system that they beat me on by a few points, when clearly I beat them up, and now I get to fight them again in a professional style, and then I still get to go to the Olympics. So that was my selling point.
I think that would be the selling point too. You know, you're able to now sit down on your punches a little bit more and wear smaller gloves. But also, yeah. The whole thing I like about this is we get to see whose chin is really going to hold up. Because a lot of times we see a guy go to the amateurs, they're a decorated amateur fighter, but go to the pros and they're not as promising as they were in the amateur rankings when they turned pro. I think this is a really a great way of weeding out who's going to have the goods when they decide to turn pros.
Yes, sir. That's what I believe as well. Like, a lot of these guys in the top amateur guys, they win on points, and they're running, or they're clearly getting not the tougher fighter, they're not the stronger fighter, but they just can move better, or dodge punches, or touch you faster. So this is going to prove who's really the fighter, who's the true fighter.
Absolutely. You know, Shahbaz, man, I really appreciate you calling in out of New Mexico, but with the Miami Gallos team. Like I said, you're going to be down in L.A. Against the Matadors, which I'm going to be at. I should be at the Club Nokia. If not, my team will be there. And I look forward to seeing what you guys are going to be able to do. Like I said, you guys got my full support. This is something that's very needed in the sport of boxing. I think you guys are going to create enough noise and generate enough people to turn heads to keep this program going. And if you're a hardcore fight fan like myself and you're a boxing fan, you're listening to Leaving the Ring right now, particular moment, go check out Miami Gallos on leavingtheRing.com and show your support. Okay, if you live in Florida, show your Miami Gallos support. Buy their shirts, recognize your guys' team. Hey, once again, Shabazz, thank you again, brother, for calling Leave It in the Ring.
No problem. Thank you guys for having me.
You take care, brother, and good luck.
God bless. Thank you.
Well, there you go. We were going to have Kenny Egon call in, but he's unavailable at the moment. So, hopefully I might have him on. Let me check him out. Kenny, are you there? No, that's not Kenny.
I'm still here, strangely enough.
Gabriel Montoya. Gabriel Montoya is still here, you know.
I'm not fighting in the World Series of Boxing, but I wish I was. I want to check it out, though. Yeah, I'm pretty excited.
I saw it last night.
LA Matadors shirt, you know.
Yeah, but you know what, Gabe? I had a chance to sit down and watch it last night, and I got to tell you, it's something, it's explosive. That's the only word I could really think of. These guys let their hands go, and the fact that they know that they only have 5 rounds to prove who's best, they got to go for it, you know?
Yeah. It's almost like that contender thing is what it sounds like, where they – it's like 4 rounds, you got to get it. And a lot of what the Fight Night Club is about is like, dude, you got to prove it. You're in with somebody else that's kind of tough, although a lot of them have been mismatches kind of later in the year. But, dudes are there to prove, like, I'm the guy and I got to win. That's fucking awesome. That's what it's all about.
You can
kind of foster that. And it also teaches people a little bit, get to know the amateurs a little bit. I'm guilty of that I don't know the amateurs near as well as I should, It gives these guys an identity. Remember back in the day, dude, we knew exactly who was on the Olympic team, and it was on, like, prime time, and we cared about Olympic boxing. Through something like this, they can build up those guys so that when they head into the Olympics, we do know who they are. And even if, NBC puts it on at 3 a.m., we're still going to want to tune in, and with DVR, we can find that boxing and be able to watch it. And we actually know who these guys are, backstory. Know them inside and out in terms of style and everything else. And then we're rooting for somebody instead of, like, hearing about, in the final round, this guy's winning, and maybe I'll tune in, and, I missed it. It was on at 4 a.m. Now we get emotionally invested, and I think that's the smartest thing that they're doing, is tying
it
into the Olympics.
Yeah, and they model themselves off of a franchise like NBA, the NBA to the NFL, where they're having a sole team represent a state. The Memphis, the Miamis, who they're going to represent, the Gator State of Florida. Then you got, the Matadors representing L.A., which really honestly is going to represent California. But this is just a start of teams, a start of teams getting involved where it can raise other people to go, let's have Sacramento team. Let's have a Texas team. Let's have, And it allows people to identify with them. Because at the moment, this is the thing about this whole franchise of what they're doing for the World of Boxing Series, is that they had a draft. And that's why I say they modeled themselves off of these franchises from other sports. They had a draft other fighters from other states and countries. Like, for instance, Kenneth Egon is from Dublin, Ireland. Okay, who's a southpaw and a silver medalist from the Beijing Games. They had to adopt him. Same thing with the Matadors. Same thing with the Memphis. They had to adopt particular fighters from other states or countries to form a team. They're in hopes that they're going to be able to generate interest in these home states where kids are going to go, hey, did you see, Miami Gallos fight? And walk into the gym. And that's how you start building fighters again. Back to the tradition of what we once had. Let me see who got on live right now real quick, Gabriel. Area code 575, you're on live right now. We're leaving in the ring. What's on your mind, brother? Hello? No? Okay. Let's see. Area code 714, you're live right now. We're leaving the ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, David. It's Eric Aguilar.
Hey, what's up, brother? How you doing?
I'm doing good, doing good. I had a comment on the question you asked him. You said if there was any fallback and they decided not to go to the Olympics, there actually is. I was talking to Jeff Benz, and he told me that since the contracts are undisclosed, he wasn't able to say, but there is a consequence if the fighters don't want to go to the Olympics.
I did see that. And Eric is the film guy for us, Gabriel, for Leaving in the Ring, and has been doing a fantastic job. He's been going out and covering, media workouts and other things for us. And he's going to be going out to the Marquez on Monday. That's right. Isn't that right, Eric?
Yeah, we'll be going tomorrow.
So
down there tomorrow.
What exactly was the penalty if they decide not to follow through and go into the Olympics? Did he mention that?
Yeah, we asked him, but he said he wasn't able to disclose it because the contracts are they're private, pretty much. So he can't tell us.
I've noticed that the contracts of finding out how much these fighters are getting, receiving, is on a hush hush. But rightfully so. I mean, why? You know what? I think a lot of times when it comes down to talking about money, this is the thing, is that this is a great, great program, what they're doing. And I'm in love with it. But let's not screw it up by disclosing how much particular fighters get, because eventually what happens is we build prima donnas where they say, hey, you know what, this guy got 80,000, I want 100-something thousand, you know, and it ruins chances to keep the franchise growing and building, you know, fighters to become the savior of boxing, which I don't think anybody is going to save boxing, because boxing has plenty of fighters out there for us to keep tuning into. But to have superstars, to have a superstar from a particular country where we identify with, that's what boxing needs. That's what we want from boxing. You know, Manny Pacquiao is a great figure for the Philippines, you know, where other countries need that. You know, Ricky Hatton is a prime example, you know, for England. You know, they had their hometown fighter there. They were able to identify with them. And with this program, the World of Boxing Series, that's exactly what they're doing. They're building names to represent the individuals that are watching them. So by dishing out numbers and how much they make, to me, it's a complete turnoff, because we have seen what it's done to our sport. Now you got fighters saying, I don't want to fight this guy for $1.5 million. I'd rather fight him at a particular amount for this much amount because it's too risky. Don't disclose the amount. I say keep it to yourself and continue doing what you're doing, which is drafting fighters to really draw other kids that are out there in the school grounds or trying to get into gangs or whatever the case is, don't want to listen to mommy and daddy, where they catch them hopefully on television and say, hey, this guy from my state, this dude is there doing this, I want to do it too, you know? And, man, if I was a lot younger, I'd want to jump in there too. I don't know, Eric, what do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right, though. And a lot of the fighters, they have the mentality of this is a team effort. It wasn't so much this is an individual effort. I mean, you had Rashid Warren there talking about how he's trying to take all the new guys under his wing because he's been to the Olympics before. So, I mean, it looks like it's going to be a really good thing, especially for the L.A. boxing scene, you know, because we already have De La Hoya down here with the Nokia Center, you know, with the fight night. So, I mean, this is just going to add even more. And, I mean, they were talking about their main goal is to get the Hispanic community out here. I mean, there's a big Hispanic community out here that loves boxing. So, I mean, this thing's only going to work in my eyes.
You know, it's got to work. And the way they're routing themselves, the way they're preparing this whole program here with each individual franchise team is the golden ticket way of doing things. It's risky. And I've spoken to Ray from the L.A. Matadors. I spoke to Mike Sophia from the Miami Gallos. And I told them, it is a risky, innovative idea. But like every idea, it may not work the first time. But if we keep tugging and we keep struggling to make it happen, it should happen. Because this is something that's very needed in the sport of boxing. Amateurs back in the mix, giving them the exposure so that we have our way of following them to identify with them so that we, when they do go to the Olympics, it's put on television. There's more views on there, even though they put up the boxing in the Olympics in these ridiculous time slots, you know, 2-3 in the morning, which you have to, you know, put on your DVR or put up a cassette tape. That's if you're still using a cassette, Eric. I use a cassette tape still. You know, I don't use DVDs and stuff, man. But hopefully they generate enough, a great large amount of populations of viewers where they say, hey, you know what, we're getting a little bit more than we've seen in a decade, you know. And so let's kind of push it back down. Let's put the time slot for the boxing for Olympics to push them down, because now they have generated a following. Each individual fighter, each team have generated a following, okay? And it also gives, like having it at Club Nokia, which Golden Boy has been the home for the Fight Night Club for Golden Boy, it gives other fight fans that really honestly, like Gable said, he goes, I'm not really in tune with the amateurs, which I've spoken to plenty of boxing fans that, well, I really don't watch the amateurs. Well, this gives you a chance to watch amateurs. Yes, they don't have headgear. Yes, the gloves are smaller. And yes, it's almost kind of modeled the way the Contender Series is. But these are not older guys that are getting a second chance. This is a new bloodline that's getting a chance for exposure, to get that chance of becoming great. There's a difference there. See the whole picture. The picture is you are possibly seeing the next superstar in his amateur prime before he goes to pro. So that means you're gonna be able to break down his style or break down his fights and remember his fights, because back in the 80s and the 90s and the 90s when the cable started becoming the way of the future, Oscar De La Hoya was on HBO. His amateur fights were on HBO, and I know a lot of people don't remember this. And if you don't believe me, I have the archives for it. I could put it up on YouTube, which they'll probably take it down right away because you know how YouTube is and stuff. And you know, just reminded me, a shout out to You Go Filming, you know, .com. Hopefully that's up, and I could put it up on there, and you could see this. This is what we need in our state of mind of boxing. This is what it needs to be. This is, you got to support it, please. If you're a boxing fan, support the World of Boxing Series. And whatever state you are, whatever team you decide to root for, okay, Asia's got four teams and Europe's got four teams. So go and support your teams that are more closer to you. Even or you know, if you're in that state, then there you go. You should be able to go buy a jersey, a hat, a T-shirt. Tune in and watch it. You know, I'm going to have numerous shirts, man, because I don't know which one's going to be my favorite right now, Eric.
I think you got to go with the Elliot Matador's right shot on that one. I think it's a really smart move, too, because they're modeling themselves kind of like football. Football has college football. You know, the NBA has a D-League. The MLB has a minor league. So, you know, and people follow these. If you ever gone to the minor league game for baseball, I mean, these things are packed with people who follow their stars to whatever team they go to.
Yep.
So, I mean, I think they're going to have the same reaction with this, you know, when the guy finally makes it to HBO after the Olympics, you know, you're going to already have that fan following from wherever he's from, you know, be it Miami, LA, or, you know, wherever they're coming from.
You know, that's a perfect analysis of how this is right here, Eric, is that you look at it, the amateur rankings, we've always looked at it as school. Okay, you need to be educated. That's where you learn how to educate your jab. That's how you learn how to educate yourself against different styles that are going to be put up against you. So you know your weaknesses and your strengths. So you learn how to work on particular things. With this here, you have your amateurs. But if you get in, if you are accepted in this franchise team's program, which is called a semi-pro. That's how it's working. It's a semi-pro. And hopefully we'll get the LA Matadors or a representative for the World of Boxing Series to kind of really break this down and how this came about. But go back to what I was talking about. Semi-pros is now, you have to look at it as the college of boxing. So you have your college football, okay, and your college basketball, and then you have your pros. Well, this is the exact same thing. This is your college boxing team. These are the guys you get to watch. And we always shout and rant about the pros, you know, cherry picking and not wanting to face each other. Well, these college boxing matches, there is not going to be a way around it. They're going to have to fight each other. So this is the beauty of it, okay? You got Team Miami Gallos versus LA Matadors, and each individual from bantamweight to heavyweight, those guys are going to end up excelling. The winner will excel into the Olympics, okay? But let's say that somebody from Team Miami beats a guy in Team Matador, and these guys eventually down the road, let's say 3 years from down the road, boom, they turn pros, okay? And they're doing enough to keep the attention of fight fans, meaning they're generating the popularity of possibly being the future of their division, Well, you got a super fight in the makings, and you were able to see a preview of it for five rounds, or however many rounds it goes, in their college semi-pro debut. I love it. I can't wait for this. You know, it just started yesterday, like I said. I'm going to continue watching this and supporting this, and I hope all the boxing heads out there do the same thing. Eric, hey, thanks for calling in, brother. I appreciate it.
No problem, dude. No problem.
Well, anyways, fight fans, it's always great to have everybody on. Gabriel Montoya had to go because of the fact that he's going to be flying back here to L.A. And I appreciate everybody calling in and chopping up with us here on Leaving the Ring. It's always a pleasure. My Boxing Fans official radio show, Leaving the Ring, your host, Dave Duenas. Again, I'm not sure when we're going to have another show because of the whole Thanksgiving weekend. We're going to probably try to have it before Thanksgiving. I will keep you guys posted and informed and when do we decide to do it. But if we don't have a show next week, I just want to say happy Thanksgiving to everybody. I hope you have a great Turkey Day, especially with your families. It's the time in the season which it should always be to embrace your family and show your loved ones how you feel. Okay? Anyways, to my boxing people out there, to mi gente, the guys out there, man, that I enjoy talking boxing with, even when we argue, you know, I always got love for you guys and stuff. Happy Thanksgiving. Okay, if I don't hear from, you know, we don't have a show. But other than that, you guys have a great Sunday. Enjoy football Sunday, okay? And don't forget, tomorrow, Monday, Espanol Radio Boxeo of Leaving in the Ring. Tune in and listen to that. Please support that, okay? Latino stand up. Anyways, you guys have a good afternoon, or is it evening? I don't even know, wherever you're at. Good afternoon, good evening. Goodbye.